During the Switch, Pivot, or Quit chat, we talk to women that have successfully navigated through some of the plot twist years of life and are eager to share their stories and what they've learned in the hopes of inspiring, teaching, or making even the slightest impact by candidly owning their truth. Hey girl, hey, and thanks for dropping in to the Switch, Pivot, or Quit podcast. Candid convo for the girl needing a lifestyle plot twist when she's deciding if it's time to switch, pivot, or quit. I'm Ayana Angel, a former sports entertainment publicist in New York City, turned traditionally published author with Simon & Schuster, who quit my old life to write a book, live in London for a bit, and explore my dreams to find my happiness and fulfillment. I'm here to help encourage and guide you through your plot twist years as your chief encourager and host of the Switch, Pivot, or Quit podcast. This week's guest, Kimoi Matthews, is a woman who is truly living her life by design. After attending a wedding in Nigeria, this former engineer had a burning desire to pursue her travel dreams full-fledged. In 2015, she quit a steady job as a tech writer in D.C. and flew to Prague to join roughly 60 strangers on a journey to visit a new country every month across Europe, Asia, and South America as what was ultimately part of the inaugural year for the Remote Year program. After a significant amount of time living abroad, Kimoi ended up in California with a content strategist contract position at Google. Kimoi is going to key us in to how she makes corporate pay and extensive travel possible, as well as how she gave herself the permission to take breaks and go after what she truly desires. So welcome to the show, Kimoi.
Thank you for having me, Ayana.
Absolutely. So to get us started, share with us a bit about what your corporate career entails and how your travels and transitions sort of came about.
Okay. Well, I just wrapped up a 14-month contract with Google as a content strategist. So before this particular role, I was actually in Argentina when I got hired. So I feel like I have this common pattern in my life where I work and travel, try to fit the two together. Mm. So ever since high school, actually, or right after graduating from high school. So before I even went off to college, I went to Spain for 3 months. So it's kind of this thing where I'm balancing out my professional career life with my desires to travel. So
That's awesome. Yeah. So many people like dream of basically doing that. And it takes sort of like a fearless spirit to sort of embark on that type of journey. Do you feel like you're fearless? Would you consider yourself a fearless person?
Oh, wow. I think with traveling, I'm fearless. I think, and I don't know if that's my own doing, but I would say I believe in a higher power. Mm. And I think we have this, whenever I have a dream, the dream would not leave me alone until I pursue it.
Right.
So I could try my best to like put it off and, you know, okay, I'm going to focus on work. I'm going to be an adult. I'm going to do the right thing. But at the back of my mind, it would still be there, like, nagging at me to go do the thing that I want to do. So it's like I'm restless if I don't pursue that particular dream. So I would say I'm fearless in that way. It's like it's almost annoying if I don't do what I want to do.
Mm-hmm. And now I'm sure my listeners can pick up on this as well as I do. You have a bit of an accent, and I think I read that you were not born and raised pretty much in the States, or is that true, or what's the deal? Because that have something to do with why you're able to just get up and go.
I was born and raised on the island of St. Thomas, Virgin Islands.
Okay.
Yes. So I left when I was 17 to go to Spain, like I mentioned before. But you're right. Actually, growing up in the Caribbean, it is very common for people to island hop because at least in the Virgin Islands itself is a melting pot of other West Indian cultures. So my family is actually from St. Kitts. So I had a passport as a young kid and would travel with my mom to St. Kitts to see other family members. So it was traveling was part of life.
Right, right. That makes sense. And that's important, too, when you talk about travel and children and things like that, because I find that people who are exposed to traveling, and especially, like, you know, serious traveling, not just, like, a road trip in the car with the family, like, I feel like their yearning for exploration is a bit bigger than maybe the typical person. And you know what? We actually had another friend to the show on some weeks ago who talked about founding her laptop lifestyle travel / work program, and it's called My Wonder Year. And you participated in the remote year program, which I think is similar. Can you share with us a bit about what your experience was like in the remote year program and sort of how you made that decision to participate?
Okay. So with Remote Year, the premise was professionals would be traveling around the world to a different country every single month for 1 year. So I was working as a technical writer in the Washington, D.C. area. And as I mentioned to you before, like, my dreams, they come to me and they won't leave me alone. So for about maybe 2 years, I was saving money to travel the world. And, of course, when you're obsessed with something, you read every single blog and every single tweet about it. And I would be reading about other people that quit their jobs to travel. But none of those people looked like me, right?
Interesting.
But I continued to save. So I was like, I'm just going to save until I reach, like, $25,000. And it took me about maybe 2 or 3 years to get to that point. And I said to myself, as soon as I hit that $25,000, I'm just going to go. And the funny thing is, I was on Twitter one day, and I saw this tweet that said, these group of professionals, if you're interested to travel around the world, sign up on this page. And it was a very simple landing page. Like, if anybody looked at it, they would probably think it was a scam. And I mean, there really wasn't a lot of information at that point. This is 2015, mind you.
Mm-hmm. And this was still, probably just, the early phases of the program.
Yes, this was. Okay. It has never been done before at that point. So we were all the guinea pigs, if you will.
Wow.
So it wasn't until, actually, that was 2014. So it wasn't until December of 2014 or early 2015 was when I got the request for applying, like, okay, you made it through. So I was like, oh my gosh, the decision is actually here. Like, I'm going to actually do this thing.
Right.
So, yeah, I went through the interview process, and I didn't really tell too many people because it sounded crazy. Like, who is going to travel around the world with strangers, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that was kind of, it pushed me to make the decision. So once I did, I was like, if this happens to be a scam, I will lose the deposit, right? And that's about it. But it's not my full $25,000. I could just go ahead and travel on my own. Like, that's how I rationalize it in my head. So,
Yeah. So you were an early adapter for the program, which is pretty cool. Within that experience, what did you learn about yourself while just living abroad, traveling abroad, living with these different people? What do you feel like you learned about yourself?
So many things. I learned that we are a lot alike. You know, we went to Europe, Asia, South America, and I think if we learn to respect each other's cultures, that we get to see, like, how much alike we are. I mean, it was strange to find similarities between, you know, a family in Vietnam compared to a family in the Caribbean. Like, there were so many similarities around how you eat together and how kids are disciplined and just the way of being. There were so many similarities. I learned that, like, I always viewed myself as independent, but I learned that I actually rely very heavily on my community. Like, for me, having a sense of family, a sense of friendship, no matter where I am, is super, super important to me. And I used to think, like, oh, I'm this girl. I can do whatever I want, travel the world by myself. But I learned that I prefer to have a supportive, positive community around me. So that was really a big, big revelation. Yeah,
that makes sense. Definitely makes sense. And many people see this whole social media life and incorporating travel and work where it looks so glamorous and, you know, and they forget about. And this is one thing that that we were talking about in a previous interview about like travel and work and all of that, and just how you sort of get bounced out of your community sometimes. And that can be a shock. So, you know, when people talk about like this glamorous lifestyle, is that how you see it? Or are there any realities that you experience that might make people think twice about their perception of this whole work travel lifestyle?
Oh, yes. I think it is very much glamorized, and we have to thank social media a lot for that. So for me, I love to work, and I have no shames in saying that I don't mind working for corporate America. Like, I love getting paid very well. So I have skills and value that I want to offer to companies. But when you're traveling, I think the profession that is being sold is that you can become this travel blogger or you can become this social media influencer, which is fine, but it depends on how much money you want to make and how famous you want to become. So for me, I kind of fell into that trap where I was like, okay, I will blog about my travels around the world because all my friends and family wanted to know. But deep down, I knew that I did not want to be a travel blogger. Like, that was not my aspirations. And then there were people who were traveling on this program with me. They were aspiring to be travel bloggers as well. It's just not easy. And a lot of times the companies that you do end up working with, all they offer is a free trip and a free meal or something, which is fine. But for someone like myself, I want to get paid money.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
I can't pay my bills with a free trip. So I think that's why in my program, I teach people how to actually land contracts, because I think contracts give you the balance, just depending on what you want. So you could work for a company for 6 months or 12 months. And in my case, I did it with Google for 14 months, and then I could take a break. Because I get paid well, I can save my money and take a break in between and travel and then repeat the process.
Right.
So instead of having to like quit your job or whatever the case may be, you know. So I think there's a balance with working on a corporate contract or working with a company on a contract that will allow you the flexibility to travel and not have to pursue the travel blogging dreams if that's not what you really, really want to do.
I like that you point that out. That gives a nice alternative to what so many people are trying to rack their brains to see if they could do. It's like, you know, doing contract work still allows you to get paid well. And then there's a duration. Right. So you don't feel like you're boxed in to this situation. If you're feeling like you want to break out, then hey,
exactly.
Contract is great because you don't feel like you're, you know, just kind of stuck in this one space. So I definitely like that. And thus far, you know, you've made plenty of big life changes, and it seems like you've been very intentional with your life changes and very smart about it. You're not trying to say, hey, I'm just going to run out there, make these changes and decisions and be broke while doing it and see whatever happens. Yeah. So what would you say is the number one key to embracing change when you're trying to mix up your life and you're maybe thinking of doing like a switch, pivot, or quit? What's your number one key for embracing change?
I say know what your risk tolerance is and be truly honest with yourself. So if you know that you don't really like being broke, or you just know like you like getting a paycheck. I mean, I understand that people want to become entrepreneurs and do the side hustle. I totally get that. I respect it. But if you know that you prefer having a regular paycheck, just own it. Okay. Just own it. And to me, the answer for pursuing all of these dreams has been saving. Like, I save and I save, and it's all on autopilot. So no matter how much I'm getting paid, I always save something automatically. So I think if you know what your risk tolerance is, like if you're the type of person that could just quit and you stretch your dollar for a year, then that's fine. Go ahead and do it, right? There will always be jobs. That's my perspective. It might be a little bit optimistic, but I feel like there's always a job there. You could work, you know, but if your dream is really pulling you, I say, I'm the one that has no problem saying, go for it, as long as you know what your risk tolerance is.
That makes sense. Definitely makes sense. Now, do you think that there's a direct correlation between making changes in your personal life and your professional life?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think your life is your life, mm-hmm. right? You can't separate work from, they all come together, your spiritual life, your finances, your community, professional. It's all part of your entire life. So whatever change you make in one area, typically it impacts the other. So, you know, sometimes the catalyst might be if you lose weight, then all of a sudden you want to make changes in other areas of your life. So if you make a change, yeah, it definitely affects you personally. And it's mm-hmm. just how you approach it. I think professionally, a lot of us, I don't know if we're as strategic with our personal life as we are with our professional life. Like I know a lot of us are willing to go back to school, or a lot of us are willing to like figure out what do we need to do to get a promotion, or how do we go out and find a sponsor. But I don't know if we put that much effort into our personal lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. And so our personal development.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. So I think if we put more effort into the type of lifestyle we want to live, mm-hmm. then I think we will see more change and more progress.
That absolutely makes sense. And I agree with you. I was just talking about this the other day, actually, on a recent podcast episode, just talking about how when you're growing up, so many people face that question of what do you want to be when you grow up? What do you want to be? And people don't ask you, who do you want to be? You know,
right.
Stuff, they try to teach you to be a good person and some of the common like principles of life. But, you know, in the end, a part of what do you want to be when you grow up is also impacted by who do you want to be? You know, it's like,
right.
What type of person do you want to be in this world? And I'm glad that you touched on that, because you're right. There's not a lot of emphasis that we place on figuring things out strategically with our personal life, as much as we put all of this stock into figuring things out strategically with our professional life. So I'm definitely in agreement on that. And so for you, when things get a little difficult, let's say, or challenging, maybe in your personal life, what are some of the things that you do or say to yourself to keep yourself going?
I say that I'm alive. Mm-hmm. And I say, this might be a little morbid, but like, what's the worst that can happen? So the reason I say I'm alive is because my mom passed away when I was turning 13. Yeah. So I always think about, you know what? I'm alive. Like, I'm doing things that she would have been proud of. Mm-hmm. So if I'm here moping around, like at the end of the day, I'm still here. I'm still alive. So mm-hmm. I always have this sense of peace, or again, I guess it's like a spiritual thing where I always feel like I'm going to be taken care of no matter what. Mm-hmm. So the worst that could happen, I lose my apartment. I could probably go crash a family member's place for right. some time or something, right? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, go find another job. Like, I have been through rough times. I have ended up working at a lingerie shop when I didn't have any money. So mm-hmm. to me, it's like, that's not really terrible. You know, you do what you have to do whenever you're experiencing something really tough. But I always think about my mom. Like, I don't know why that is, but I always think about her. I'm like, if she was here, like, this wouldn't be that big of a deal. So mm-hmm. just power through, keep going. Mm-hmm. And of course, I talk to a lot of my family members and, you know, I vent to them and cry to them.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's just like, you know, a lot of us take for granted that we're here to experience another day. We're healthy. And those things, it's like some people that are still alive, they don't even have the beauty of being able to be fully healthy or fully mobile to try things from day to day or go out and experience certain things. So it's like, you know, when times get tough, I love that you, you know, just look at the overall bright side. I'm alive. I'm here. I can do it still. You know, that's felt.
Yeah. And I do want to say that I recognize that I'm privileged because I am healthy. So, you know, I don't know what I would do if I had like a terminal illness or whatever the case may be.
Right.
So I do recognize that. I don't know what will happen, but yeah, I can just, I just have a sense that I will do whatever I have to do.
Yep, there you go. That's right there. And so you mentioned briefly family and support, and how important is having that support system when you decide to take a chance on you, pretty much like, you know, quitting a secure job to travel the world? Like, how important is that family or that support system?
Oh, man, I was so scared to tell my family. But my grandmother is the type of grandma that she's still in St. Thomas. And she would watch the Weather Channel. And if there's a thunderstorm happening in D.C., she will call me. Like, that's the type of grandmother I have. So she worries a lot. So I was so scared to tell her, but when I did, she was like, oh my gosh, girl, live your life.
That's beautiful.
She was so happy for me. She was so proud. So that definitely helped a ton. Like, I think I told her maybe the day before I was flying out to Prague. Whereas my dad, on the other hand, he's retired military, so he has flown all over the world. When I told him, he was like, oh my gosh, that is so crazy. Are you sure you want to do this? So, you know, it's just a balance I tell them, but at the end of the day, I have to do it. Like, it's me that has to live with my decision. So yeah, but my grandmother, I think her support meant so much to me. My friends are definitely supportive. They all live vicariously through me. So that kind of help. I was like, I can't just chill today. I have to do something amazing so that
you can't let anybody down.
Right.
They're watching. They're living through you. So on your journey, what was your favorite either country or city and why?
Oh, man, I did not want to leave Argentina. Like, I fell in love with the country from day one. The people are very friendly and very family-oriented. I felt at home. Yeah, and I think part of it is because I speak Spanish, so that definitely helped a ton. But I just loved being there. Their lifestyle is very in alignment with mine. I love to dance. And those, the Argentinians, I mean, the women would get dressed up in heels every night to go salsa dancing or tango dancing. Like, they did not wait until Friday night or Saturday night. Like, this was part of their everyday life. I just loved it. The food is great. And they start their day and end their day a lot later. So I love that part. So it was very common to go to a restaurant at like 10, 11 o'clock at night and see like 80-year-old couples there having dinner. Like,
That's awesome.
I was like, I know. I was like, back in the States, like, you know, the 80-year-olds, they have dinner at 5 o'clock.
Yeah, and bed by 6.
Exactly. So, yeah, they start their day a little bit later, which I happen to enjoy. So, yeah, that was one of my favorites, for sure.
Yeah, I think that's the beauty of traveling and experiencing other cultures and seeing how other people live. Sometimes it highlights for you how things don't have to be. you know, like just because you're conditioned to things being a certain way, it's like, well, who says it has to be like that? It doesn't have to be, you know? So
yeah,
I love that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Now you are an engineer turned tech writer. Is that correct?
That is true.
Yeah. So now you started teaching others how to land like tech writing jobs and whatnot. How did that sort of come about? How did that transition from being an engineer come about? And how did the sort of pivot to teaching others how to get these tech writing jobs? How did that come about?
Okay. So I studied engineering because my math teacher in high school told me to. And I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do, but I loved her class. And she was like, oh, you would be a good engineer. I was like, all right, cool.
Mm-hmm.
Very impressionable at that age.
Right.
So I moved. My dream company at the time was this huge defense contractor. And I thought it was really cool to build these unmanned air vehicles. Totally nerding out right now, but I wanted to like build all these cool weapons and stuff like that. So I was like, I'm going to move to DC and that's what I'm going to do. And sure enough, I moved to DC, but when it came time to actually do that type of work, I was bored to tears. So it wasn't as expected. So over time, I had different types of jobs that were very technical in nature, of course, but I always tried to explain things in layman's terms, no matter what I was doing. If I was working on satellites or circuits or whatever the case may be, mm-hmm. I'm like, it needs to make sense. Number one, it needs to be documented. So for whatever reason, a lot of engineers don't like to document stuff. Mm. So I noticed that pattern of what I was doing. So after the recession happened, I had lost one of my contracts that I was on, and I was looking up what could I do with my extra time. So I was looking up writing courses, and I saw tech writing. So I was like, oh, what's this? So I picked the class, and I was like, wait a minute, I have done this my entire career. Like, I've always done this.
Just didn't know
people
it.
I was like, people actually get paid to do this? I revamped my resume and decided to pursue this career, and that's what I did. And that's what I've been doing since 2011, and I absolutely enjoy it. So one of the things that I've learned over the years is that, of course, there's not a lot of Black women or men in the field of engineering or tech, right? Mm-hmm. And I was very passionate about having people that look like me in the STEM field, science, technology, engineering, and math.
Mm-hmm.
But now that I switched over to writing, I had a little bit of like a little bit of shame. Was like, I don't have that badge of engineer anymore to my name. But I realized I was still doing technical work. I still worked with engineers. Like, my role was still very critical. So, but this role is not very well known. So that's why I'm on this like mission to help people break into this field. It's like, you can get into tech even if you don't have an engineering background. You don't have to be a developer. You don't have to be a coder.
Yeah.
If you love writing, you love making things easy to understand, then technical writing is definitely a path to consider. So that is kind of the mission I'm on right now. And it's been fun. It's an experiment. You know, I don't have a lot weighing on it. But, yeah, I want people to know if they want to get into tech or work on all these cool apps and stuff that's coming out, you don't really have to become a developer if that's not what you really want to do. So,
So what would you say a typical day is like for a tech writer? Because I'm sure a lot of people aren't familiar, just like you weren't before, with like tech writing and the whole idea of it. So what would you say a typical day is like for a tech writer?
So a typical day would be a new feature is launching. So let's come up with some kind of product. Let's say we're working on a cell phone and there's a new feature that's the product manager. This person came up with this vision for this new feature. So when that happens, as a tech writer, you have to figure out, how does this feature work? How does it help the user? And how do you educate them on how to use it. So let's say it's basically like your help center articles type of content, but also any information that would pop up on the cell phone about this feature. So if you want to say, hey, check out this new feature, like you as a tech writer would be the one to write that text. Or any text on the cell phone itself that you see was probably written by a tech writer. So think about all the apps that you use, the website, whether you go to your favorite music app or maps or, you know, something to request. I don't know if I could say brand names or not, but if you wanted to, like, request a car, you know, the type of app that you would use.
Yeah, you can say Uber.
Okay. So if you pull up your Uber or your Lyft app, all mm-hmm. the text that you see on that app was probably written by a tech writer.
So it doesn't necessarily mean like you're sitting here writing articles and stories for Wired magazine. It
no.
more so means like you're helping the people that are doing the engineering and the coding and stuff like that translate what they're trying to sell or push to the marketplace into layman's terms.
Exactly. That's
okay.
exactly what it is. Yeah.
Right.
So we help, yeah, for people to use a product, they have to understand how it works. And that's where you as a technical writer would come in. You basically write instructions.
I didn't even know that there was such a thing, you know, and I'm really understanding it now that you're breaking it down. And I like when we are able to introduce people to things that they hadn't thought of before, because guess what? Like you said, you're not about just doing things on the free and for a free trip. So obviously you're able to make a living at this, and it seems
yes.
like it's something that is useful. So I'm glad that we're discussing this and covering this, because guess what, ladies listening, this could be your new thing, you know? Like, you never know.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's in demand right now. So it's a perfect time to get in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we don't see a shortage of apps, you know, and it's not
yeah.
just mobile apps either. It could be the website that you use for your bank, for example, or
yeah.
when you go to book a flight. Like
mm-hmm.
all the text that you see, error messages,
mm-hmm.
pop-up messages, the mm-hmm. name of a field, the name of a tab, like all of that stuff is what my day would entail. Like, I get
wow.
to name some of these features. So,
yeah, that's really interesting.
Know.
Definitely
yeah.
interesting. So would you say that based on all of your travels and career changes and pivots and everything like that, would you say that you figured out sort of like your why in life?
Ooh, that's deep.
And it's okay if you haven't. I mean, a lot of us are still on our journey, and your why can be evolving. It can change, you know?
Yeah, I don't know if I've figured it out. I see some patterns in my life. I think I'm just now getting to that stage of inspiring other people.
Mm-hmm.
I never really thought like what I did would be inspiring, because I just thought I was just doing what I want to do. Like, who cares if you travel around the world? You can read about that on Google. But apparently it's important to other people. So I think I'm at that stage where I am comfortable with that, because I'm very much an introvert.
Yeah.
So having the spotlight on me is not something that I am used to or very comfortable with, but I'm learning to get comfortable with the uncomfortable.
So, mm-hmm. There you go. Embrace it, girl.
Yeah, yeah. So I think my experiences could either help people or inspire people. So now I'm owning that and seeing what will happen.
Speaking of all of that, what does success mean or look like for you?
Success is peace. Yeah, success is peace. If I have peace, that means there isn't something that is bothering me,
mm-hmm.
that I'm unsettled with, that I'm not worried about something. So I see success as just basically embracing life and being positive no matter what happens.
Mm.
And I'd say being positive no matter what happens, if you can find that thing to hold on to, you have peace and love in your life, I think you're successful.
There you go.
Yeah.
So if you had a friend that called you and she's like, girl, I'm so over this job. I'm not feeling fulfilled by my work. Like, I just need a change. What advice would you give to her to encourage her to go after what she truly wants?
I would say, what do you want? I think we're pretty good at articulating what we're frustrated with or what we don't want.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you want? And then how can you change your perspective about your current job? Because I think we put so much emphasis on the work that we do, and sometimes it's okay for a job to be a job. Like, it doesn't have to be your happy place or your passion. You know, it could just be something that funds your dream. Like, that's how I view my work. I love what I do. Don't get me wrong. But for me, it funds what I want to do in life, which is traveling. So be clear about what it is you want to do. Try to change your perspective on your job. If you were to quit, would you be at peace with that? Like, if you're not at peace, then that means you're not ready to quit, because there's something you need to do before you have that peace. So I would say focus on what you want to do, and then how can you make a plan to get what you want?
That's the key right there. And I like the way you touched on early on that, you know, you didn't just say, okay, I'm going to quit my job and go and travel. You said, I'm going to aggressively save so that I can then afford to travel, because that is my goal right now. So, yeah, I like that. Absolutely. So what's one thing that lets you know that you're living life on your terms, you're living a life according to her?
Because I said so.
Exactly.
Yeah, I had a vision. I wrote it down. I made it plain. It's in the Bible. If that's what I said I wanted to do and I'm doing it, then that's how I know. There's no ifs, ands, or but about it. So.
Yeah. I love it. That makes sense. It's been such a pleasure talking to you, Kamoe. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much. This was really fun.
Good. Now, before we go, make sure to tell everyone where they can catch up with you, or rather keep up with you online.
Appropriately named keepingupwithkamoe.com.
Oh, look at that.
All my social media stuff is on there. Kamoy is spelled K-I-M-M-O-Y. A Google search usually pops up my name. I'm the only Black girl with that name on the internet.
Yeah, that's unique. It's such a cute name. I love it. Well, once again, thank you so much for hanging out with us. And to all of you out there listening, I hope that you have been inspired by Kamoy's story, her travels, her just fearless nature. And for you, just always keep killing it.